Welcome to an Impact Ministries production, brought to you by Impact Ministries World Changers, changing the way the world sees God. Learn how you can become a world changer today by visiting www.impactministries.com. Now, here's your host, founder of Impact Ministries and developer of Heart Physics, the self-development programs that have changed thousands of lives around the world, Dr. Jim Richards.
You know, there's a song that I love so much by an artist called Janny Grime that most of you probably aren't old enough to remember. It says, "We've been made more than conquerors." And, you know, that's the truth. We are more than conquerors because we didn't have to go to war. We didn't have to fight the battle. Jesus won the battle for us. And you know what? We get to live in his victories. And that's what it means to be absolutely more than a conqueror. Today, I'm sharing with you about the absolute victory over the devil, how we don't have to be afraid of the devil. We don't have to be afraid because of the resurrection of Jesus. If you want to hear this series in its entirety, be sure and go to impactministries.com and get all four messages in this series on the faith of Jesus, because I want you to have faith in what he accomplished by his faith, not faith that you have enough faith. So be sure and send a link to everybody you know about this. You'll never be afraid of the devil again when you listen to this and you get this working in your heart. Three Days That Changed the World is a series that's all about what was accomplished by the faith of Jesus from the cross to the throne. And I'm going to tell you something, this is going to change your whole world, because never again are you going to be wondering, do I have enough faith to believe for this to happen? You're going to be saying, did Jesus have enough faith to believe for this to happen? And you know something? It's easy to answer that question. It's always easy to believe that Jesus had enough faith. 3 days that changed the world. If you've been following along for weeks now, you've been getting in touch with the fact that Jesus used his faith to conquer death. In other words, for him to come up out of the grave, he had to have enough faith to overcome physical death. He had to have enough faith to believe for God to raise him up out of the death of being our sin and be raised up by the glory of God, being raised up by the Spirit of righteousness. We discovered that Jesus had to have the faith to conquer Hades. He had to have the faith to conquer the grave. In other words, Jesus used his faith to conquer sickness, disease, all of these things. And that really should change everything about how you walk in faith. You know, most of us have been taught all of our life that we had to have enough faith to overcome sickness, and then enough faith for finances, and enough faith to overcome these emotional struggles. And, you know, and basically we're always trying to get more faith, more faith, more faith, more faith. But the truth is, did Jesus have enough faith to overcome those things? We're not trying to have faith in our faith. We're trying to have faith in his faith. And it's easy to believe that Jesus had the faith to conquer all these things if we believe that God raised him from the dead. And once we believe in his faith, then we become participants in whatever he obtained because we are in him. So all we really have to know is, did Jesus conquer this problem? Yes or no? Am I in him? Yes or no? Do I share in his inheritance? Yes or no? So we've already talked about all of these things, but I'll tell you something. I want you to know, and all of these were battles we could not have won with our own faith, but he had the faith. So we've discussed now how we share in his every single victory. If it's his victory, it's our victory because we are in him. So Jesus had the faith to conquer sin, death, hell, the grave, and the devil. And Romans 8:37 says, "We are more than conquerors through him that loved us." In other words, he was the conqueror. He was the one that went out and fought the battle. But we are more than conquerors because we share in that victory without even having to fight the battle. That is so phenomenal. Now, we're going to end your fear of the devil, because I want you to see how that Jesus totally annihilated the devil, totally stripped him of principality and power. And that word principality means a rank or an authority. So it's talking about his position that he had as an angel and his right to do things. And I'm going to tell you something. You don't need to ever be afraid of the devil, and you don't ever need to think that he has authority. As a matter of fact, the book of Colossians was written because there was a false doctrine going around that said that even though Jesus had conquered the devil, if you didn't live just right, if you didn't just do everything the way you were supposed to, you would open the door for the devil and you would give him authority over your life. You'd give him the right to attack you. Well, you know something? I have trouble with that because my Bible says that when Jesus came up out of the grave, he said, "All authority is given to me." In other words, he now has all the authority. I can't give authority to the devil. I can't give him the right to do things into my life. Now, I tell you this, through ignorance or through unbelief, I can unwittingly yield to destructive demonic forces, but it's only because of ignorance or unbelief. It's not because he has any legal right to come into my life. Even if I fail, even if I mess up, he doesn't have any right. I share in, and you share in, the victory that Jesus had over the devil, and that victory is absolute as long as Jesus is Lord, as long as he sits on the throne. It's not based on what you do or what you don't do. In Colossians 2:11, it says, "In him you were also circumcised with a circumcision made without hands by the putting off of the body of the sins of the flesh." The prophet Jeremiah talked about that, and actually he's referring to what happens in the heart and putting this stuff off of your heart. So you're made new again. You become a new creation. And it says, and this is done by the circumcision of Christ. And it says, "Then you're buried with him in baptism, in which also you were raised with him through faith in the working or the operation or the power of God who raised him from the dead." Now, I'm telling you, if you didn't do this when you were water baptized, you don't have to go get water baptized again, but you need to operate faith in this. And if you've never been water baptized, it is a ceremony whereby you have a physical experience to operate faith about death, burial, and resurrection with Jesus. And when you're put down in that water, that's when you acknowledge, "I died with him and I'm buried." You say, "Well, Brother Jim, I don't believe in immersion. I believe in sprinkling." Well, all right. Then when you got sprinkled, then you got to say, "Okay, I'm getting buried right now. This is the dirt burying me." You know, it's not the way you do it that's so important. It's the faith that you use when you do it. And when you're brought up out of that water, you need to be saying, just like Jesus was brought up out of this grave, I am raised up with him in newness of life. And that's got to be your starting place. And every time you share communion, just like I taught you last week, and if you missed last week, go back and look at it. We did a Resurrection Sunday communion service, and you can participate in it. That's where you can use communion to connect with the blood and the body of the resurrected Lord Jesus. So verse 13 in Colossians goes on to say, "And you, being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him." So we're alive together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses. All of your trespasses are forgiven, having wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us. Now, let me tell you something about the law. The part of the law that was wiped out was the part of the law that was against you. God's law about how to treat each other, that is still truth. That is as true as it's ever been. The only difference is now we know that we're supposed to apply that by walking in love. But you know, it's an interesting thing. I used to notice when I was young in the Lord, I'd read where Paul quoted some Old Testament promise, and I'd go back and read it, and I'd think, he left out the negative part of this verse and only quoted the positive part. Well, what I didn't understand at that time was Galatians 3:13 says Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law. He redeemed us from every part of the law that was against us. But he said he made all the promises of God were yes for us. Well, the law was full of promises. All of those promises of the law are still ours, but all of the curses, all the part of the law that was against us is wiped out. So it says that having wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us, and he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. You know, a lot of people say, "Well, Jesus nailed my sin to the cross." No, he didn't. He took your sin to Hades, where you would have had to taken it if you had not believed on him. What he nailed to the cross were all of the requirements of the law that you had to do to be made righteous. That's why Romans 10:4 said that Jesus has fulfilled the righteous requirements of the law. He took care of that. But verse 15 is where we really want to get into. It says, having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them. Now, earlier in the book of Colossians, it says that he stripped them. He stripped Satan, or he stripped all principality and power. In other words, every bit of rank and right, every bit of authority that Satan ever had, every right that he ever had to do anything, was totally stripped away. And it says that he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them. Now, this is a really interesting passage in the original language. You know, there were times in the Old Testament or in any history that you read about where a king would go out to battle and he would come back and he would have won the battle. Now, this particular passage in the Greek is really not talking about having a triumphal battle, because I don't know about you, I can stand to lose a battle every now and then. I just want to win the war. Well, this particular passage in the original language says that it was a triumphal procession. It doesn't just say he triumphed over them. It says it was a triumphal procession. Now, a triumphal procession is a terminology that is only used in the case of an absolute victory. So this is not talking about just winning a battle with the devil. It's talking about winning the battle with the devil. So what does that mean? Well, you know, here's what this would look like. In the Old Testament, or really in that part of history, whenever let's say a neighboring king decides that they want to invade your territory, so they start coming in, they start pillaging and stealing and attacking the villagers, because what they want to do, they want to inspire fear in the villagers so that the villagers, out of fear, not out of loyalty, but out of fear, will change sides, and they'll offer their allegiance to the enemy king just because they're afraid. Well, I want to tell you something. There's a world of people that live in constant fear of the devil, constant fear of sickness, constant fear of the curse of the law, constant fear of poverty, and they may not openly give their allegiance to the devil, but I want you to understand something. Self-centeredness is the epitome of Satan worship. Satan doesn't need you to worship him. He just wants you to be self-consumed. And in the book of Revelation, when it talks about people that will be in the lake of fire and the brimstone, at the top of the list is the fearful. That's an amazing thing to me. You know, you would think that there would be some nasty, nasty, wicked, dirty sin that would be at the top of the list of people that will be in the lake of fire and brimstone. It's the fearful and then the unbelieving, because you see, fear always produces unbelief. So this enemy king is raiding these villages, and out of fear, he's forcing people's loyalty away from their king. And so finally, the king decides he's got to bring an end to this, so he goes out to battle, and you know, they may have all kinds of skirmishes, and he may have some victory parties when he comes back because he wins some battles. But the triumphal procession only occurred when there was an absolute victory. And here's what it would often look like. You see, the king, your king, would want you to have the security to never be afraid again, because fear was what was turning you against your king and causing you to give loyalty or give allegiance to the enemy king, because you're afraid. You're afraid he's going to kill you. Are you afraid you're not going to be happy? You're afraid you're not going to be sick? You're afraid you're going to be broke? You're afraid things are not going to work out? So he wants to make sure that you feel safe and secure. So when the absolute victory comes, they would very often take the enemy king, and they would put all of his family in front of him, and they would slaughter his family in front of them and then gouge his eyes out. And the reason they did that, because they wanted the last thing that he saw would to be all of his hope of anybody ever delivering him, all of his successors being destroyed. So he knew he could never raise up another army. He didn't have any generals. He didn't have any leaders. He didn't have any heirs. He didn't have any family. But it didn't stop there. After they did that, very often they would cut off his thumbs. They'd cut off his thumbs so they could never ever hold a weapon of war again. He couldn't wield a sword or a knife or go to battle. And many times they'd cut off his big toes. He couldn't stand by himself. In other words, he was going to be an invalid all of his life that would never ever ever be able to fight against even the smallest child. And then they'd put a rope or a chain around his neck, and they would attach that chain to the saddle of the king. And when the king would come back into the city, you know, they would sound the trumpets. They would bring everybody in from the villages, because what that king, what your king wanted you to see is that you had absolutely nothing to fear, because your enemy had been totally vanquished. He had been totally annihilated. He would never, even though he was alive, he would never, ever, ever have the power to be able to harm you again. That's a triumphal procession, and that's what Jesus gave us. And I want you to understand something. You don't have to wonder if you have enough faith to stand up against the devil. All you have to know is, did Jesus stand up against him, and did Jesus win? You know, in the book of Revelation, I think it's the 11th or 12th chapter, it kind of gives a synopsis of history, and it describes the birth of the nation of Israel, and it describes this child being born of the nation of Israel. We know this child is Jesus. And it describes this Jesus being caught up into heaven and casting out Satan and a third of the angels. Most theologians agree that at the resurrection of Jesus, when Jesus conquered death, hell, and the grave, he went into heaven and he cast Satan out. And one of the bases for that, we know that when Jesus went into heaven, he purged or cleansed the heavenly holy of holies. And I don't think he would have cleansed the heavenly holy of holies if Satan had still had access. He cleansed it by his own blood. But he stripped Satan, he cast him out, and Satan never again had access. See, that's why in the book of Job, Satan had access to God, and people think that Satan is still there accusing you. No, he's still the accuser of the brethren, but he's not having access to God to accuse you. He might accuse you to somebody else, or might accuse you to yourself, but he is cast out, he is stripped of power. All that he has left is deceit. All that he has left is the fact that his lies have been permeated in planet Earth. You know, Genesis chapter 3 tells us about how fallen angels at one time came to planet Earth, and they inhabited and cohabited with the daughters of men. And Jewish history tells us that it was these fallen angels that taught people anti-God truth, taught them how to murder one another, taught them about precious stones, taught them how to make weapons of war and kill each other. And so Satan filled the earth with his lies, his anti-God lies. And here we are 6,000 years after the garden, and these lies are still floating around for every person who doesn't want to walk with God, every person who doesn't want to live godly, every person who wants to do their own thing, buys into these lies that have been floating around, these philosophies that have been taught in universities and by government leaders and by mystics and by cult leaders. People buy into these things, and they become anti-God because they buy into the lies of Satan. But that's all he has. He does not have the power. As a matter of fact, if you think the devil has the ability to kill somebody, I want you to understand something. A person that believes a lie of the devil, if they believe in their heart, just like Ananias and Sapphira in the book of Acts, the devil didn't kill them. The Bible doesn't say the devil killed them. As a matter of fact, the Bible indicates that they gave up their own spirit. Why? Because their heart condemned them. Why? Because they still believe the law. Why? Because they believe that blasphemy was worthy of death, and Satan filled their heart. In other words, Satan's lies filled their heart, but they gave up their spirit. Satan didn't kill them. Satan doesn't have the power to kill anybody. Even in the book of Revelation, when the Antichrist comes, the Bible says that he was given authority to rule. And people say, see, God has given him authority. No, he's not. People are giving him authority. People are giving him the right to rule. Satan is a powerless, deceitful liar. And I'll tell you, he's not as smart as everybody thinks he is. And I know we've been told how he's all organized. Satan is chaotic. He is full of chaos. He's not organized. He's not powerful. And Jesus has already won the battle. And you don't have to be fighting these battles. Matter of fact, the Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians 2:7, it says, we speak in the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew, for had they known, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. I want to tell you something. Satan was so dumb, he never perceived God's plan. He thought he could kill Jesus, and that would be the end of it. He thought he would kill Jesus. As a matter of fact, one of the parables gives a synopsis of we'll kill the servants, we'll kill all these people, and then if we kill the Son, we will get the inheritance. Satan thought if he killed the Son, he could take over planet Earth. And man, I'm telling you what, he was so stupid that he didn't know that in bringing these accusations against Jesus and in reviling all these people to crucify Jesus, that at the end of the day, it was his complete undoing. It was his complete stripping of authority. That was the end of everything that he thought he would ever accomplish. And I'll tell you, from that day to this day, he has run around frantically knowing that he only has a short time. You know, the book of Isaiah says something interesting. And this is one of those prophecies that's talking about a king, but most scholars agree, because of the context, that this prophecy has a double fulfillment, because it's talking about the fall of Lucifer, and then it's addressing this king, and most people believe this is also speaking of Lucifer. Isaiah 14:16 says this. It says, those who see you will gaze at you and consider you, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble? You know something? I have an incredibly powerful book called Satan Unmasked. And I'll tell you, it's been used around the world to set people free in Africa and places where people are so superstitious and so afraid of the devil. People are getting set free from the fear and the power of witch doctors, and people all across America, they're bringing an end to screaming at the devil and fighting with the devil and being afraid of the devil. Satan Unmasked, you might want to check it out, but here's the deal. The day is going to come when we're going to see Satan as he really is. And that's when we're going to say, this is the one that made the nations to tremble. This is who I was afraid of. I want to tell you something. You don't have to wait until then to see him as the nothing, the defeated foe that he already is. You can see that now. See, don't be a shadow boxer. Paul talked about it. Don't be a shadow boxer who, because you don't trust the finished work of Jesus, you think you got to fight the devil all the time. Be a person that has faith in the faith of Jesus, faith in the finished work of Jesus. Live in his power. The same power that defeated the devil is at work in us. Ephesians 1 says, Paul prays that you'll get this revelation knowledge about the exceeding greatness of his power toward us who believe, according to the working of his mighty power, which he worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in heavenly places, far above all principality and power and might and dominion, and every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in that which is to come, and put all things under his feet, and gave him to be head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all. I'll tell you something. All you need is a revelation of who Jesus is because of his faith. Who is he? Who he is as a result of following God, staying true and faithful, never sinning, becoming our sin, being raised from the dead, and a revelation of the fact that you are in him, and a revelation of the fact that he stripped Satan of all power and every part of the law that's against you, and has obtained every single promise for you. Now, I'll tell you something. When you get there, life gets so easy, you can't believe it. Victory gets so easy, you can't believe it. Listen, I want you to be sure and stick around. Come back for my mentoring moment. I want to share some things with you that help you know how to put this into practice. I want to be sure and invite you to my Limitless Living Seminar in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. We're going to have a great time up there with Bob and Audrey Meisner. I tell you, I love those people up there. We have a wonderful time. You can check out my website, itinerary, to get more information, or you can go to my new day and check it out, and be sure and get signed up for this. Be there with us. We're going to have a wonderful time. You know something? I'm doing meetings all over North America, and I'd love for you to be a part of it. And one of the ways you can keep up with what we're doing that is to be sure and go to my website and get download our free mobile app. You'll get our magazine. You'll get my daily inspirational posts. You'll have my itinerary. You'll get special offers that nobody else gets other than the people who have our phone app. You'll be able to keep up with everything that we're doing and stay connected. You can even watch our weekly broadcast on there. And we're going to be creating a new app for heart physics. Everything you need will be right there. You know, I know that by now you have discovered that coming to see what Jesus accomplished by his faith on the cross, in the grave, in the resurrection, conquering the devil and obtaining the inheritance is the most important thing that you need to know out of the entire Bible. There is nothing more important. And when you come to understand what happened in these 3 days that changed the world, your faith will get absolute like never before. You know, anywhere that the Bible uses the word knowledge in the New Testament, almost always it's using this Greek word that means experiential knowledge. And so Paul said, listen, you need revelation, experiential knowledge about what happened and this power that works that raised Jesus from the dead so that you can connect with this resurrection power. Now, there's two ways that you can get experiential knowledge. One is to have the experience. So you can die. You can use your faith to get raised, you know, from the dead. You can conquer the devil for yourself. That's experiential knowledge. There's another way that you can get experiential knowledge. And it's what the Bible calls meditation. You know, biblical meditation is where you ponder, consider, think on, imagine what Jesus accomplished through his death, burial, and resurrection. It's just like the scripture we read a couple of weeks ago, where he says, set your mind, set your imagination, set your affections on things above where Christ sits at the right hand of God. Paul more than once told us that we should meditate on these things. And so I want to encourage you that if you want to get revelation knowledge, you say, well, a revelation is something that God gives me. No, actually a revelation is something you get when you are willing to look at things a different way. When you are willing to consider something, see, God's always speaking the truth to us. The problem is, I've got this way that I want to see it. I've got this way that I've always seen it, and I've got to be willing to see it differently. So whenever you begin to meditate and ponder and imagine and think about and consider what it would be like with you dying with Jesus, you're going to get a revelation. You're going to see things that you've never seen about the death, burial, and resurrection. You're going to see things about overcoming your particular problems. When you see yourself seated at the right hand of God, you are going to see and experience things that you've never been able to consider before. And so the key to revelation knowledge is, one, being open to seeing it a different way, and two, getting inside your heart, meditating on these things so that you have the experience. And when you experience the resurrection and you're open to letting God show you how that applies to your life, your whole world will forever change.
Thanks for listening to the weekly Impact Ministries World Changers podcast with Dr. Jim Richards. If you like what you've just heard, we encourage you to share our web address, www.impactministries.com, with friends and colleagues. Be sure to check out the resources section of our website for previous podcasts and our videos. Join us next week for another great message by Dr. Jim Richards.